everyone, and welcome back to Murder, Mother and Me, where each week we will dive into some of the most infamous murders, mysteries and everything in between.
So if, like us, you are intrigued by all things true crime, you're in the right place.
I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm your other host, Patty. I'm the mother.
And I'm the me. As always, thank you all for the support so far on the podcast.
Please follow, share with your friends and write us a review, but only if it's a good one.
Yeah, and also please follow us on Instagram. It is at Murder, Mother and Me Podcast. We post everything that we talk about in all of our episodes on there for you to have a look at.
This week we are talking about a case that takes place in the year 2013, and here are some interesting facts about that year.
Two Earth-like planets in one solar system were discovered.
I like the sound of that. Like, do you know when I was six, I used to always stand at the window and point to the moon and say I was a moonster and that's where it came from. So maybe that was one of my home planets, maybe.
That doesn't surprise me that you used to say that, to be honest. And I think we actually said on one of our previous episodes about, you know, we think that it's stupid that people think that we are the only things to exist in our solar system.
No, there's definitely other things. And, oh, and by the way, when I was a kid, I always liked science fiction films, and Star Trek was my favourite thing back in the day.
The House of Commons voted in favour of same-sex marriage in the United Kingdom. And finally, the number one password for 2013 was 123456.
That'd be mine, definitely. Yeah. I nearly said my password then, because it's so obvious. Okay, everyone, let's get on with this week's episode. This is the case of the mysterious death of Elisa Lam. In 2013, Elisa Lam, a 21-year-old Canadian student, was found dead in a water tank on the roof of the Cecil Hotel in Los Angeles after being reported missing for weeks. A viral surveillance video showed her behaving erratically in an elevator before her disappearance. But before we go any further, let's go right back to the beginning. Elisa Lam was born on April 30th, 1991, in Vancouver, British Columbia, to immigrant parents from Hong Kong.
That's the year I was born.
Just going to say that. At 21, she was a college student at the University of British Columbia. She was known as a creative, curious person with an active presence online. In mid-2010, Elisa began a blog named Ether Fields on Blogspot. Over the next 2 years, she posted pictures of models in fashionable clothing and account of her life, particularly her struggle with mental illness. In a January 2012 blog post, Elisa lamented that a relapse at the start of the current school term had forced her to drop several classes, leaving her feeling so utterly directionless and lost. A little over 2 years after she had started blogging, she announced she would be abandoning her blog for another she had started on Tumblr, Nouvelle Nouveau. Its content mostly consisted of fashion photos, quotes, and a few posts in Elisa's own words.
So it sounds like, so far, she's just a normal teenage girl that just likes to blog about random stuff that she's interested in.
Well, I think she's trying to be a normal, as you like to say, teenage girl, but she obviously, it says, you know, she had a struggle with mental illness.
I was just going to say, I think we've established that quite early on, that there were struggles going on behind the scenes.
There was problems, wasn't there? Elisa had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder and depression. According to her family, who reportedly kept her mental illness private, Elisa had no history of suicidal ideations or attempts, although one report claimed she had previously gone missing for a brief period. Elisa had a history of not taking her bipolar medications, and as a result, on several occasions, suffered hallucinations that would cause her to hide under her bed for refuge. She was hospitalised at least once for one of these episodes.
So that's already painting quite a picture of Elisa, isn't it? And, like, her mental state.
I think the fact that she didn't take her medication is a big part of this, isn't it? You know. In January 2013, Elisa set out on a solo trip across California, a break she hoped would clear her mind and give her a fresh perspective. Los Angeles was her last planned stop. For her trip to California, Elisa travelled alone on Amtrak and intercity buses. She visited the San Diego Zoo and posted photos taken there on social media. On January the 26th, she arrived in Los Angeles. After 2 days, she checked into the Cecil Hotel near downtown Skid Row. She was initially assigned a shared room on the hotel's fifth floor. However, her roommates complained about what the hotel's lawyer would later describe as certain odd behaviour, and Elisa was moved to a room of her own after 2 days. According to Amy Price, the manager of the Cecil Hotel, Elisa was leaving notes for her roommates that said, go home and go away, and would lock the door to the room and require a password for entry. A few days before her disappearance, Elisa attended a live taping of Conan in Burbank, but was escorted off the premises by security due to disruptive behaviour.
So, in the hotel, what was she doing? Sitting with her back against the door saying, what's the password to get in the room?
It sounds a little bit, doesn't it, like she's a bit paranoid about, you know, people entering the room and maybe her personal security and stuff.
That's what you used to do when you were kids, wasn't it? What's the password? You know what I mean?
God, this is all coming back to me now.
So it's obvious that she's having some kind of, you know, mental delusions or something.
It sounds like she was a bit paranoid, doesn't it, about people going in and out and maybe her personal security and safety. The fact that she's not taking her medication again, it seems to be a regular occurrence as well, doesn't it? You know, and it obviously causes problems. I mean, this is not just one time, is it, that she's done it? She's having problems in the hotel where she's staying, problems where she's gone out for the day, you know, to a recording studio and they've removed her. So it just seems like she's persistently like this.
Yeah, it sounds like she's kind of lost touch with reality a little bit and she's having some kind of episode. And obviously it does link back to her not taking her medication, which we've already discussed.
I believe that her parents were a bit dubious about her travelling on her own, but being 21, you know, I suppose they were trying to give her a bit more of a normal life as well, but had reservations about her obviously not taking her medication and stuff and things that can occur because of that. Let's talk briefly about the Cecil Hotel. Originally built in 1924 as a luxury hotel, it slowly declined in reputation and became known as a hotspot for crime, violence and even suicides. Its history includes connections to two serial killers, Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, and Jack Unterweger, who both stayed at the Cecil during their active periods. It was also a place where many people with nowhere else to go ended up. And so Elisa, a young woman from a different country with her own struggles, unknowingly stepped into a place known for dark and unsettling events.
I was just going to say, I guess she probably chose this hotel maybe because it was cheap, and originally she was sharing a room with two other people, it said, so obviously that makes it even cheaper. It sounds a little bit like a hostel, to be honest.
I think it did graduate into a hostel eventually. It was a big opulent hotel to begin with, and it was built just before the Great Depression, but obviously when that hit, it went down because people couldn't afford to stay there. And so it developed into this Skid Row area, which was full of homeless people, and it was really quite dangerous, you know. It was a regular sort of occurrence for things, violence to be happening on the streets around it. And consequently, they couldn't charge, you know, the high prices that they used to charge. And then the clientele went down as well.
Well, from the pictures that I've seen of the Cecil, it looks far from a luxury hotel. And I know you've already kind of touched on it, but weren't there a lot of different crimes and stuff happening within the Cecil?
Yeah, there was a variety of things that happened there. As I've just said, you know, there was suicides. People threw themselves out of the windows, including one poor young woman who didn't know she was pregnant and got up in the middle of the night with pains in her stomach and delivered a baby, which she thought was dead, but was actually alive, and she threw it out the window and it landed on a nearby building on the roof. Again, there was the serial killer Richard Ramirez, which was, you know, one of America's most notorious serial killers. He's actually the rock star of serial killers, you know, because he was fairly nice looking and girls flocked after him and things, weirdos like, but never mind.
So it was a pretty crime ridden place, this Cecil Hotel. It doesn't sound like the luxurious hotel that it was, you know, advertised to be.
Because it actually declined and room rates were cheap, I think they were just trying to keep it going at that point. So it was very cheap for people to stay there. So obviously it attracted a lot of undesirable characters. They could literally go in, there was a lot of drugs going on and petty crime going on, you know, it wasn't a safe place to stay at all.
Yeah, I actually read about the Cecil Hotel a little bit, and I believe that people actually lived there because it was that cheap. They would just pay for an ongoing room. It wasn't just somewhere you go and stay for a night or two. People actually used it as a living space.
Eventually, it went so downhill that they actually tried to rebrand the hotel to attract more customers. You know, in this day and age, travel is a lot more easier to do. And so they were appealing to the student market, I think, more than anything. You know, a quick stay, quick trip away, travellers going around. And that's why Elisa ended up staying there.
Yeah, I think they rebranded it to Stay on Main. Is that right? They changed the name.
It was called Stay on Main, yeah. And they used sort of like bright colours and, you know, just tried to give it a bit of an uplift, really. The problem was that the elevators in the hotel, everybody used the same elevators. It was basically split into two different hotels at that point. But when you got into the lift, the people who were staying at the stay on main part, which were all these students and, you know, travellers, were going up in the same lift as all these undesirables were going up in to get to their rooms.
So she's obviously been looking for a kind of cheap place to stay, and she's come across this, well, what is now called a stay on main, without knowing the history of it probably, and just booked the cheap room there.
I don't think young people are interested in things like that, are they? I mean, on social media, she's probably seen other people staying there as well. And, you know, it seemed like a good place because it was full of people her age.
Yeah, and I wonder if she had have known the history and, you know, what happens at the Cecil, would she have still booked a room there?
I think she probably would, to be honest, because I think young people don't think like that. Probably thought, actually, it was a bit of an attraction, you know, that it was a notorious kind of place to stay in, the, you know, from past events, and a bit cool, I would imagine. Elisa's stay at the Cecil began as expected. She shared updates on her social media and even reached out to her family regularly, following a promise to keep them updated on her travels. On January the 31st, the day she was supposed to check out of the Cecil and head to Santa Cruz, her family didn't hear from her. Concerned, they contacted the LAPD, who began a search and distributed flyers around the area. Hotel staff who saw Elisa that day said she was alone. Outside the hotel, Katie Orphan, the manager of the Last Bookstore, was the only person who recalled seeing her that day. She was outgoing, very lively, very friendly, while getting gifts to take home to her family, Orphan told CNN. She was talking about what book she was getting and whether or not what she was getting would be too heavy for her to carry around as she travelled, Orphan added.
So, obviously she was in good spirits before she went missing. Doesn't seem like there's any kind of psychotic episode going on or anything at that moment when she's buying those books, and it doesn't seem like she's planning to not go anywhere else. It sounds like she's planning to move on to her next destination.
Yeah, she was pretty lucid, wasn't she, when she was talking to this store manager. And the fact that she was getting gifts to take home to her family, you know, rules out kind of suicide, really, doesn't it, at that point? You know, she was planning ahead. Police searched the hotel to the extent that they legally could. They searched Elisa's room and had dogs go through the building, including the rooftop, but the dogs were unsuccessful in detecting her scent. But we didn't search every room, Sergeant Rudy Lopez said later. We could only do that if we had probable cause to believe a crime had been committed. On February the 6th, a week after Elisa had last been seen, the LAPD decided more help was needed. Flyers with her image were posted in the neighbourhood and online. It brought the case to the public's attention through the media.
I was going to say, it must have been hard for the police force to conduct such a massive search of a hotel as well, because there's so many rooms, so many different places where someone could be.
I think it has 700 rooms. It's a massive hotel.
And as far as they know so far, they don't even actually know that a crime's been committed. For all they know, she's just missing.
So they're just doing a cursory search of the hotel, aren't they? Corridors, public areas, and even the rooftop, which will become a strange fact later on.
I think they'd probably need all kinds of different warrants and stuff like that to be able to go into people's actual hotel rooms as well.
Yeah, well, it says that they searched to the extent that they legally could. So, you know, without probable cause, as they say, you know, they can't enter people's rooms and look, can they? Go through people's personal belongings. Then, on February the 13th, 2 weeks after Elisa's disappearance, the LAPD released a disturbing piece of evidence. Surveillance footage from one of the Cecil Hotel's elevators taken the night Elisa was last seen. In this footage, Elisa's behaviour is strange to say the least. The video shows her entering the elevator, pressing multiple buttons and then standing back as if waiting for something. The elevator doors remain open and Elisa begins peeking out as if she's looking for someone or maybe hiding from someone. At one point, she steps out of the elevator entirely and moves her hands in a strange, almost otherworldly manner. This behaviour has puzzled people for years. After pressing buttons, leaning out and gesturing, she eventually leaves the view of the camera. And here's where the mystery deepens. The elevator doors remain open for a period of time, then close, open again, and finally close, moving as if on a delayed command. This footage went viral online, leading to a frenzy of theories and speculation. It was reposted widely, including on the Chinese video sharing site Youku, where it accumulated 3 million views and 40,000 comments in its first 10 days. Many of the commentators found it unsettling to watch.
Well, straight away, just from the description of what you've just said, even from the description, and I've actually seen the CCTV footage as well. I've watched it actually quite a lot of times, weirdly. But I find it fascinating. But even just from the description, to me, based off what we know about Elisa so far, it sounds to me like she's having some kind of mental breakdown or manic episode or something, because it already said that she was prone to hallucinations and stuff when she doesn't take her medication. And when you watch the video, it doesn't seem like someone who is of sound mind.
No, definitely not. But I think what's so misleading about this is that when this video went viral, very few people knew about her mental state at that time. So if you've not got a history to look at, do you know what I mean? This would look very strange indeed, wouldn't it? But in light of knowing all of her mental problems, it's kind of expected, really.
I mean, even knowing her mental problems and her past, it's still a very strange, eerie video to watch.
It is very eerie, you know, and there was all kinds of speculation about it at the time, that there was some reason she was getting out of that floor, and the fact that she was popping her head out and looking, was someone following her, especially because of what happened at the end of this story, you know. But I think personally, you know, the fact that she didn't take her medication on a regular basis, this is just par for the course, really.
Well, I believe as well, the floor that this is filmed on, it wasn't even actually the floor that her room was on. So I think she was just in the lift for some reason. And we also can't forget the fact that she was potentially really paranoid as well, you know, asking her roommates for passwords to get into the room and stuff. So she could have convinced herself that someone was following her and that she was trying to hide from something that didn't even really exist, but in her mind it did exist.
Or was she being followed? Was there somebody after her? And, you know, we're just assuming that because she didn't take a medication, this is just, you know, a consequence of that. But for all we know, given the facts later on, she could very well have been being followed by somebody.
I mean, if she was being followed, why was she going in and out of that lift, though? Why would she not just stay in the lift, press the button and go to a different floor? It's the fact that the doors kept opening and shutting, she's peeking out of the thing. If someone was following you and you were actually fearing for your life, you're not going to stop and start peering around the corner to check if they're still there, are you?
No.
You're going to just get in the lift, you're going to press the button, close the doors and go to a different floor.
Maybe, but maybe because she was so erratic with her medication, maybe she was being followed, but she was still displaying all this weird behaviour.
Yeah, I think it's not easy, but I think it's easier to just attribute this to her not taking her medication. But we actually really don't know if there was something, you know, more serious going on.
I mean, was it a case of she didn't take her medication and that would explain all this behaviour and somebody took advantage of that situation? Several theories emerged to explain her actions. One was that Elisa was trying to get the elevator car to move in order to escape from someone who was pursuing her. Others suggest that she might be under the influence of ecstasy or some other party drug, but none was detected in her body. When her bipolar disorder became known, the theory that she was having a psychotic episode also emerged.
Well, that's kind of exactly, we've just said all of that anyway, but I think the easiest option for people to go with is the fact that she might have been having some kind of psychotic break.
I think that's the most likely conclusion to come to, isn't it?
I just can't wrap my head around, if I was being chased or I was being followed through a hotel, even if I was paranoid, it's so easy to get into a lift and just press a button and get the doors closed and go down. It's so easy. But she was pressing multiple different buttons. I mean, maybe she was panicking. I guess you don't know what you would do in that situation, but she didn't move floors. She just stayed on that floor.
Was that some kind of problem with the lift, though? Or?
And also, eventually, she gets out of the lift on that same floor and disappears out of the camera view. So if you were being followed, why would you leave the lift?
Other viewers argue that the video had been tampered with before being made public. Besides the obscuring of the timestamp, they claimed parts had been slowed down and nearly a minute of footage had been removed. This could have been done to protect the identity of someone who otherwise would be in the video, either related or not to the disappearance.
That's a bit weird, isn't it?
It is a bit weird, but if this video was released by the police, you know, I think that's kind of something they would do, isn't it? You know, if you were a member of the public getting in the lift with her, you wouldn't want to be seen on there, would you? So it might be to protect someone's identity in that way. For nearly 3 weeks, there were no leads on Elisa's whereabouts. Hotel staff and police continued searching for her, but there was no sign of her in the building or nearby areas. Meanwhile, guests at the Cecil Hotel began to complain about issues with the water supply. low pressure, an unusual taste and dark discoloration. On the morning of February the 19th, Santiago Lopez, a hotel maintenance worker, found Elisa's body in one of the 4,000-gallon tanks located on the roof, providing water to guest rooms, a kitchen and a coffee shop.
That's actually made me feel a bit sick, to be honest.
Oh, God.
It's when it said the water was discoloured.
Oh, yeah, I know. But an unusual taste, which means people have actually been drinking it.
And little do they know, there's a body floating in the water where that water supply is coming from.
Imagine having your coffee in the morning, you know, a little bit of Nescafe, and then you have a weird taste, and then you find out it was someone's body floating in the tank that your coffee was made from with that water. Oh, that's
I wouldn't
horrible.
Drink Nescafe because I'm a bit of a coffee snob.
No, but do you know what I mean? And also, another thing, cleaning your teeth with the water.
Do you know one thing I will say? If you were going to boil the water, maybe it gets rid of all the toxins in it, the bacteria.
But it wasn't boiled though, was it? Oh, you mean in the coffee?
To make a coffee.
Well, I still don't think I'd choose that over,
But the fact that people were even brushing the teeth with discoloured water makes me feel...
Why would you
disgusting.
Do that though? If you've turned your tap on and brown water comes out, are you actually going to put your toothbrush under that water or...?
Surely not.
You definitely wouldn't, would you? Ooh, that... I wonder if they got any compensation. I couldn't even say that then. I wonder if they got any compensation for that.
I would want a hell of a lot more than compensation.
You would relive it every day, wouldn't you? Putting the toothbrush in your mouth with this water.
Especially when you found out the reason that the water was discoloured.
No, that's what I'm saying. It'd be like post-traumatic water disorder, wouldn't it? You'd never be able to turn a tap on again.
PTWD.
Oh, that's horrible. I think I've just invented... Can I patent that, please? Through the open hatch, he saw Elisa lying face up in the water. The tank was drained and cut open since its maintenance hatch was too small to accommodate equipment needed to remove Elisa's body. On February the 21st, the Los Angeles Coroner's Office issued a finding of accidental drowning, with bipolar disorder as a significant factor. The full coroner's report, released in June, stated that Elisa's body had been found naked. Clothing similar to what she was wearing in the elevator video was floating in the water, coated with a sand-like particulate. Her watch and room key were also found with her. Elisa's body was moderately decomposed and bloated. It was mostly greenish, with some marbling evident on the abdomen and skin separation evident. There was no evidence of physical trauma, sexual assault or suicide. Toxicology tests showed traces consistent with prescription medication found among her belongings, plus non-prescription drugs, such as Sinutab and ibuprofen. A very small quantity of alcohol was present, but no other recreational drugs. Investigators and experts have, however, noted that the concentration of her prescription drugs in her system indicated that she was under-medicating or had stopped taking her medications recently.
Okay, so from that... It sounds like maybe she was taking her medication, but she just wasn't taking enough of it. Because it says she might have been under-medicating.
I would say she was under-medicating just by the toxicology reports.
And also, let's just talk about this realistically. So, she somehow managed to get to the roof, which, from what I understand, no one knows how she got to the roof, because there's no CCTV footage of her actually getting there. She's gone out onto the roof. She's climbed up a 10-foot ladder on top of this big water container. She's gone through a hatch, which doesn't sound very big. For what? To go for a swim?
The thing is, though, what is not mentioned here is the fact that there was no ladder evident when they accessed the tank. So...
Oh, so there was no ladder attached to the tank?
No. So how did she get in that tank? There's no CCTV footage to say how she got there. There's no ladder for her to get up there. I mean, she can't get into a tank and then remove a ladder afterwards if she's drowning in the tank. Her clothes were removed. And what I find strange about this is, as well, it says a very small quantity of alcohol was present. So where did that come from? Did she go for a drink with somebody before? Was she drinking in a room? And the other thing is, as well, this rooftop tank was only accessible by opening a door with a key.
Yeah, I think it was only accessed by staff.
Exactly. So that sounds a little bit strange, doesn't it, in itself?
Yeah, and also, you know, potentially, you don't know what kind of effect mixing alcohol with a prescription medication, no matter how much she's taken of it, might have had on her body. Along with, it said, Sinutab and ibuprofen was found as well. So you don't know that concoction of drugs mixed with a bit of alcohol or whatever might have done to her.
Yeah, there was a fair cocktail of drugs involved there, wasn't there? Some of them sort of common ones, you know, that you would take, but in the right quantities, who knows what it may have caused. I still think the strangest thing for me is the fact that there's mysteriously no CCTV footage. She's gotten onto a restricted area with no key. She's gotten into a water tank that requires a ladder, yet when they found her, there was no ladder. And she's partially clothed, which may or may not have some bearing. They're saying there's no sexual assault taking place. But the fact that she's in that tank, if she was psychotic, yeah, she probably may have done something like that. But how the hell did she get there?
I think that's the more confusing thing, more than her actually getting in a water tank. Because like you said, if she was having a psychotic break or something and she was prone to hallucinations, who knows? Well, she might have thought it was a swimming pool. Who knows? But the fact is, how the hell did she get there? And how, not only how did she get up onto the tank and into the tank, how did she get onto the roof?
Yeah, with no key. But also, how would you even know those water tanks were there if you were going to go for a swim? You know, if she was psychotic and was thinking something like that, I wouldn't know they were up there. You wouldn't think about that, would you really? To me, this points to somebody being involved that was part of the hotel itself, you know, a staff member or something, you know, that allowed her up there at the very least, even if they had nothing to do with her death.
I also wonder, why was she found naked? Why did she have no clothes on?
Well, you could argue, couldn't you, that she got into a water tank and, as you say, if you're going for a swim, maybe she starts to take her clothes off, but...
It's all just a bit weird, isn't it?
It's very strange, especially because there's some missing footage on that, you know, elevator footage. Was that because there was a staff member in the lift with her at some point or passing by?
Well, I think also if you put it all together in a timeline, if you were to just isolate the incident, like, oh, she was just found in the water tank and this CCTV footage never existed of her in the lift acting strange, maybe you could... I don't know, maybe there's some kind of explanation for how she got there, but I think when you add it all together, it's starting to feel to me like someone else was involved.
It could have just been a case of an opportunist going past and seeing that she was not in the right frame of mind and just took advantage of that. Maybe it wasn't planned or anything. Let's just say, for instance, a hotel worker, a maintenance man or something going past, sees a nice-looking young girl and sees that she's not in the right frame of mind, state of mind, and just takes advantage of that situation and takes her to a private place, which is the roof, and then disposes of her body.
Yeah, maybe you said to her, oh, come and look at this. Do you want to see an amazing view or something from the roof? I've got a key.
She was a very vulnerable person, wasn't she? She would have been easy to take advantage of. Yeah, and he's took her up there. And, you know, who's got access to a ladder? A maintenance man? That's what I'm thinking, but I could be wrong.
Well, yeah, and I just think, again, when you add it all together from the weird CCTV footage, her acting paranoid, being found in a place that really only a select few people have access to. I don't know.
That narrows down the pool of suspects, doesn't it, to me? And I'm pretty sure, I mean, surely they checked out all of the maintenance workers, but no CCTV footage. How would they ever prove that? The Elisa Lam case became an internet phenomenon for a reason. It's both chilling and frustratingly inconclusive. People began offering theories ranging from the plausible to the paranormal. Let's go over some of the most prominent theories. Theory 1, a mental health episode. The most accepted theory is that Elisa's mental health struggles played a significant role in her behaviour and her death. During a manic or psychotic episode, people may experience hallucinations, paranoia or delusions. Perhaps Elisa believed someone was following her, causing her behaviour in the elevator. This theory suggests that, in a disoriented state, she somehow accessed the rooftop, got into the tank and drowned. Theory 2, foul play. Another theory is that Elisa was murdered, though there's no solid evidence for this. Skeptics of the accidental drowning theory point to the difficulty of accessing the tank and Elisa's strange behaviour as possible signs of foul play. Some suggest that someone may have coerced her to the roof, forced her into the tank and left. Theory 3, supernatural elements. Finally, there are those who believe that something supernatural may have been at play. The Cecil Hotel has a history of tragic events which has led some to believe it's cursed. People argue that Elisa may have been influenced by some dark energy, possibly leading to her death.
Let me guess, you think it's option 3?
No, I actually think it's... I don't know, I'm going between theory 1 and theory 2.
I think all of the evidence would point to theory 1. based on the fact that she was clearly mentally ill. She had mental episodes. She was on medication, or she should have been on medication. However, I think it was theory two. I think she was murdered.
It's like a combination of theory one and two, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I do believe she was having some kind of psychotic break. But, like you said, I think maybe someone has took advantage of her. And I think they've maybe said, oh, do you want to come and see this on the roof or whatever? And in the state that she's in.
Do you want to come and see some puppies on the roof?
Yeah, or something like that. And I think, I don't know, it still doesn't explain the weird behaviour in the elevator to me.
Well, as it says, you know, it's inconclusive, isn't it? You just left to draw your own conclusions. But she was having some kind of psychotic episode, clearly. But like you, I think probably somebody could have seen that and taken advantage of it.
I have a feeling that she was being followed, or she just didn't get a good feeling from someone. And again, it still doesn't explain the way she was in the lift, because why didn't she just get in the lift and go down or go up or close the doors or something? I don't know.
I think somebody's seen her having this episode, and maybe she was panicking. Maybe she did think somebody was following her, and they've said they'd try to help her, and maybe she's gone with them, and that's what's happened. I just think it, for her to get onto that roof and get into a water tank, although that is something that you may do when you're psychotic, was just practically not impossible for her, but not likely.
Yeah, and again, you don't know what people are going to do when they're having these kind of psychotic breaks and stuff. I mean, she may well have found a way to the roof somehow and found a ladder and climbed up and thought it was a good idea in the moment or whatever, or who knows what she actually thought that tank was, but it just doesn't seem likely to me.
She may have seen it as some kind of escape route, mightn't she? But even the fact that they say there's no sexual attack taking place, it doesn't mean to say that that wasn't intended. And that's why she was maybe, you know, some of her clothes were removed. And what's the easiest place to put her where no one's going to find her? If you've committed a crime, I mean, and you're up there already, it's a quiet, private place, isn't it, where no one else is likely to go. Especially if you were, like, one of the only workers on duty that day. Because that's what I'm thinking, you know, it's not just a random passerby, it's someone who worked there, who knew the layout of the hotel and everything.
I was going to say, it would have to be someone that knew those water tanks were there, knew that it was going to take people a while to find her. It doesn't sound like a really well-planned-out attack, but someone that just knew that he could put it in there. And we always say he, don't we?
Yeah, and that all ties in, doesn't it, with a random opportunist who's seen a situation, taken advantage of it, had the method to carry out the crime and dispose of a body.
But then, I always just go back to the CCTV. Why was nothing else captured on that CCTV footage? Like, who? There was no one else, according to everything I've read.
But then there was some missing time. Whatever reason that was taken out, we don't know, do we? It may have been to protect someone, or maybe someone they were investigating but didn't have any other concrete evidence. Maybe that person got out and said, meet me up there or something, I don't know, and that's why they're not with her. Or maybe they just couldn't pin it on somebody, I really don't know.
Yeah, because it's not a case of, you know, oh, well, we've seen this guy on CCTV, so it must be him. There's a lot more that has to go into it. They have to have, you know, irrefutable evidence, really, don't they, that someone was involved with the crime, and they can't do that because it's inconclusive. So am I right in saying that you also think that she was potentially murdered?
I think potentially, yeah. I think there's a good possibility, a strong possibility that that was the case.
This is quite similar to the Ray Rivera case, wasn't it, that we discussed?
Yeah, it's also on a rooftop, isn't it?
It's also on a rooftop in a hotel under mysterious circumstances.
And no CCTV footage. In September 2013, Elisa's parents filed a wrongful death suit claiming the hotel failed to inspect and seek out hazards in the hotel that presented an unreasonable risk of danger to her and other hotel guests, and seeking unspecified damages and burial costs. The hotel argued it could not have reasonably foreseen that Elisa might have entered the water tanks, and since it remained unknown how she was able to get into them, no liability could possibly be assigned for failing to prevent it. In 2015, the suit was dismissed.
Well, I think it's not okay, but why? You're never going to think that that situation's going to happen.
I think that was quite a reasonable outcome for that case, really, because I don't think you can ever plan for every eventuality of what someone could possibly do in any situation. you can only secure all the exits and things to a reasonable standard. I mean, you can't allow for every guest being psychotic and what they may or may not do. So I think that was justifiable.
But at the end of the day, you know, a family's lost their daughter, haven't they? So of course they're going to try and do everything they can, and they're obviously going to blame the hotel.
I think they just want to apportion blame to someone. But in this case, I think the precautions were adequate. So, what do we make of the Elisa Lam case? The official conclusion remains accidental drowning, influenced by her mental health. But even with that, there's an undeniable sense of mystery. Elisa's story resonates deeply because it touches on universal fears. Fears of the unknown, fear of isolation, and fear of losing control. It also reminds us of the importance of understanding and addressing mental health. And beyond that, it's a stark reminder of how complex people's inner lives can be, even when they seem fine on the outside. Elisa Lam's case has also left a lasting impact on the Cecil Hotel itself, sparking new documentaries, books, and conversations about the darker side of urban life and mental health.
Well, again, we've got another weird case on our hands here, where we don't actually know the ending.
There's lots of these weird cases, isn't there? It's not to do my head in now.
I mean, for all we know, it could have just been an accident, and that is the official ruling, but I still can't shake the feeling that I feel like there's more going on.
If I was Elisa's parents, I wouldn't be happy with that. Though, supposing if there's no other evidence, what can they really rule it as?
And, you know, this Cecil Hotel has now become world famous. It was already quite well known because of other stuff that had happened there, but after this case, it really blew up. And I believe that people, you know, especially like YouTubers and stuff like that now, they're all booking rooms at the Cecil Hotel to go and make like little mini documentaries in there and see what it's like to stay at the Cecil Hotel for a night. So I'm sure the business there is probably booming.
It's added to the Cecil's mystique, hasn't it? And it's probably done them a lot of good in a sad way, I suppose. But do you know what? I'd like to go and see it myself, you know.
I would like to go and see it. I'd like to go and stay there, weirdly.
Till you turn the tap on.
Till you turn the tap on and it's brown.
Oh, down to the water's brown, yeah. We should go though, shouldn't we, and just check out some of these places, I think.
I'd even like to just go and stand outside it and just see it.
It's very imposing, isn't it? You know, the size of it and everything, and I think just the look of it. Because you know what's gone on there, you know. I mean, there was also other cases of people throwing themselves out of windows and all kinds of stuff gone on there.
I think it's just that typical thing of it's the mystery factor with this, isn't it? It's what actually happened. And I think, you know, the CCTV video of her in the lift and the elevator is what's kind of catapulted this case into the public eye, really.
Yeah, I think because it's on YouTube and stuff, you know, it's forever going to be there, isn't it? And it's always going to be that one thing that people think about when they think about this case and the Cecil Hotel.
And if you're interested in this case and, you know, looking a little bit more into it, you can go on YouTube and watch the video of her in the elevator. And I would suggest that you all go and do that because it is creepy and eerie, and you'll understand exactly what we've been talking about this entire time.
Can I just ask you a question? Do you believe that buildings can absorb energy so that, you know, when bad things happen there, do you think like that energy lingers around and stuff?
What, and can kind of create new bad things?
Well, not necessarily create new bad things, but do you think it's actually a thing, you know, that, because everything's made of energy, isn't it? So I think where there's an accumulation of bad energy, you can actually feel it when you go in somewhere, maybe, or maybe those who are sensitive to it can.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we've all had that thing where we walk into a room or we walk into a building and you just get a bit of a weird feeling.
Yeah, that's an instinct, isn't it?
It's a gut reaction, isn't it, to think, something about this doesn't feel right. But I think it's hard to say without even going there how you would feel.
I wonder if people know which room Richard Ramirez stayed in, because apparently when he stayed there, he was going backwards and forwards there while he was doing his killings, so...
Yeah, wasn't he one of those people that I was saying, you know, he practically lived there?
I think he stayed there for a number of weeks, at least. So people would have got in the elevator with him, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I find that fascinating as well, that you can be in a place with someone and you don't know that they're actually going out murdering people.
I always think it's weird when you're walking through town and you could be walking past, like, say, Andrew Lloyd Webber or someone. You know, if he wasn't, you didn't know him. What I mean is there's these multi-talented people and you don't know what they can do. And also, there's all these weird people with all these bad intentions. And
you don't know what they can do.
Yeah, exactly.
So it looks like we're booking flights to the Cecil Hotel.
Should we go? And report back. if we're still alive.
How much would someone have to pay you to spend a night at the Cecil Hotel?
Well, I'd do it if you were with me. Mind you, you're no help. Can you imagine?
I'd be the worst person in that situation.
Every time there was a noise.
I'm saying that I'd love to go and stay there, but I actually don't think I would, to be honest. I'd be terrified.
I'd like to go and see it. I don't know whether I'd want to stay there, really. I'd like to go and... I'm always like this, you know, where things happen. I like to go and... I've got a big imagination, so I imagine what it's all going to be like, but I just like actually to see it.
Yeah, and it's always probably very different to what you imagine it to be like when you're actually there.
Do you remember that time we went to Crosby? Was it Crosby? And we went to where that fella went missing, and we were by the beach and we parked the car.
Oh, it was Southport.
Oh, Southport, yeah, that's right. I knew there was a beach involved.
So basically there was a young man that had gone missing by where I used to live, and we found out where the last place was that he'd been seen. And me and my mum got in the car and went down there and had a little look ourselves.
Yeah, we went and had a look, didn't
we? We were really interested. And anyway, it turned out that they found his body a couple of weeks later, and it was in some kind of...
It was washed up somewhere
else,
wasn't it?
It was washed up in a little stream, yeah. But we were so interested because he completely vanished.
I can't believe he went and sat there, though, and then walked along the path.
I can believe it. I think this is, again, just one of those cases where I'm so interested and so invested in these mysterious deaths, mysterious disappearances. But on the flip side of that, it does my head in as well, because I actually really just want to know what happened.
Do you lay awake at night thinking about these things? Sometimes if I get an idea in my head, you know, it doesn't leave it for a while.
Well, I just convinced myself that, you know, I've convinced myself in this Elisa Lam case that she was murdered. So then I start trailing off and thinking, but how and who and why do we not know? And why is there no evidence?
So you go down a rabbit hole, basically.
I go down a massive rabbit hole.
But I'm like that with the Maura Murray case. You always get one case that I sometimes sit and think about it, you know, and wish I could just go back and be there that night so I could see what happened. Because it'll just haunt me forever, you know.
Okay, everyone. So that's it for this week on Murder, Mother and Me.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
And remember, if you can't do the time,
don't do the crime.